Our next case for argument is Stevens v. the Housing Authority of South Bend. Mr. Hull.
May it please the Court, I'm Kent Hall from South Bend. I represent the appellant, Bridget Stevens. In the time which I have available, I would like to address two categories of errors which we think the District Court committed in granting summary judgment below. First, it made what are essentially credibility determinations, and secondly, it misinterpreted the Supreme Court's ruling in the Rucker case with respect to when a housing authority may evict a party at which time.
I don't understand from your brief what your claim is. That is, what federal law do you think her eviction violated?
Your Honor, we believe her eviction violated the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, as the Supreme Court considered in the Rucker case. We believe that the District Court below granted summary judgment.
Well, I don't understand. She was evicted for various violations of her contract with the Housing Authority. What does that have to do with due process?
Well,
she didn't even challenge. The last two grounds on which she was evicted. So why isn't that the end of it?
Huh? The reason, Your Honor, that it is not the end of it is that my client denied, the District Court said that my client lied.
Well, she seemed to agree that she lied on her application for the unit and that she allowed her husband to stay at the apartment even though he, you know, was an ex-felon, and he wasn't an approved tenant. And see, this is what I'm wondering. If she would have been evicted anyway, you know, what are her damages from the first notice? I mean, what relief could the court give her if she can't return to the unit under any circumstances?
Your Honor, she did not admit that she lied. She denied that she lied.
But she did lie. She lied.
Where is that in there?
Here's what she did. She would have been evicted even without the shooting, because she allowed her husband to stay in the unit when he wasn't an approved tenant. Drugs were found on a police visit for domestic violence. She committed an act of domestic violence against the husband who wasn't supposed to be living in the unit. The lies on the application, takes care of any problems here.
Your Honor, she denied all of those allegations.
But she denied letting her husband stay for 2 weeks?
She denied that the witnesses she had, which were herself as well as her children. The testimony, which is set forth in the appellee's the appendix which the appellee filed at pages.
But what is her 22. What is her federal ground? She's evicted pursuant to a contract.
The federal ground, Your Honor, is that the Housing Authority receives federal financial assistance, and because of that, it is state action, and to evict her for these reasons, we allege, is a denial of due process. Now, the district court below said...
You mean that every time... every time someone who receives federal financial support is accused of breaking a contract, that that creates a basis for a federal suit?
No, Your Honor. But whenever a public housing authority evicts someone under these circumstances, as in the Rucker case, where there was no question that there was a due process violation alleged, if she can establish that she has a claim under the 14th Amendment. The district court said that my client, that the certain claims were moot because she had, quote, voluntarily moved out. At the same time, the district court says, this is at page 1026 of the district court's opinion, that she was evicted.
She didn't leave after the first eviction notice, and that's the only one she challenges. She left only after two additional notices that were filed for completely different reasons that she did not contest.
Well, that the fact of the matter is, Your Honor, we were challenging the entire process by which she was being evicted. And the housing authority seems to be saying in
this
case.
So now, are you saying that you did contest the two later notices?
Your Honor, we did not file a lawsuit with respect to the later notices. We still could do that if the housing authority is saying that we should do that. But with respect to the initial violation, she was told.
Yes, but you know what's so weird about your case?
Oh,
she okay, she's ordered to leave, and you sue, say it's improper order. But she doesn't leave. Much, much later, she leaves, January 27, 2009, and so far as we know, she moved for reasons unrelated to any. Why did she leave on January 27, 2009?
The record establishes, and I believe the opinion states, that she had received a third eviction notice pertaining to other events, and the district judge said she was evicted. That's his word.
But if she left because she received an eviction notice, which she hasn't challenged, then what does that have to do with her initial squabble on which the suit is based?
Because we are challenging the process by which the housing authority evicts people under these circumstances.
But she didn't leave until she received a second notice, which you're not, or a third or whatever, which you're not challenging. Now, if that was the cause of her leaving, then she wasn't harmed by that first eviction notice, which is the only one you're challenging.
Well, it is, though, the state. I mean, she denied that she denied in her deposition that she left voluntarily, and that is
in the. Look, you don't understand. You don't seem to be following. She receives an eviction notice. She sues, but she doesn't move out. Then she receives more eviction notices, and this time she leaves. And you don't say these subsequent eviction notices were illegal. They're not part of your lawsuit. So the only reason she left is that she received eviction notices, which she has not decided to challenge.
Your Honor, what you've stated is the housing authority's theory. It is not our theory, and it's not what the district court
knows. I don't understand you. She left. Isn't it true that she left because of the subsequent eviction notices?
She had been persistently told by the housing authority.
Didn't she leave because of the subsequent eviction notices?
The third eviction notice triggered her departure.
Right. That triggered her departure, and you haven't challenged those notices. So, where's the causal relation between the first eviction notice and her ultimate departure?
It was part of the entire process, Your Honor.
Why? She paid no attention to the first notice except to bring the lawsuit. It's only the subsequent notices, against which she apparently has no conceivable defense, that got her to leave.
Your Honor, I believe my time. I'll try to answer your question. I don't think filing the lawsuit is paying no attention. I think we did respond to the eviction process with the lawsuit.
No, not to the subsequent eviction notices. You didn't respond to them.
Well, as I say, the possibility of further action is still there, if that is the difficulty. But it is our view that it is...
But if you never bring any further actions, the point is this, the first eviction appears to have had no causal consequences. That's your problem.
Yeah.
Well, it was... I believe it did have causal consequences, Your Honor. The only reason she didn't leave...
When were they?
The consequences were that it put in motion a process by which...
I don't understand put in motion, because the second and third, or whatever they were, however many there were, the subsequent eviction notices were based on acts that occurred after the shooting, separate acts, independent acts.
And, Your Honor, she never received any notice. She never received any opportunity for hearing the first time that this after acquired two notices appeared.
Jesus.
Were in the lawsuit. And they are advancing, if I may just finish, my time is up. If they are advancing the second and third notices as reasons for the eviction only after the lawsuit was filed, and when they brought the original action against her and gave her the notice of it, they did not give her the opportunity for any kind of a hearing on those notices.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hall. Mr. Palmer?
Could someone help?
Thank you.
It's a hard way to lose some of your time, isn't it?
It is. May it please the court.
No.
My name is Mike Palmer. I represent the appellees in this case. Your Honor, I want to correct a few things that Mr. Hull said. First of all, Ms. Stevens was not evicted. She voluntarily vacated her unit, which you've picked up on. She just decided to leave after receiving the second and third notices, which are unrelated to the shooting that occurred December 25th, 2007. Now, Mr. Hull also points out that
How do we know that? That she voluntarily did it rather than in response to the eviction?
She testified during her deposition that she received the second and third notices and that she decided not to contest those notices. We've cited in the brief where that's in the record. She wasn't entitled to a hearing on the second and third notices because they involved drug-related activity and alleged violent crime, and under the U.S. Housing Act, you're not entitled to a grievance hearing in those situations. So because she voluntarily vacated her unit, these claims in this case are moot. She has alleged in her brief, in her opening brief, that she suffered damages as a result of the subsequent notices and her move. But those aren't a part of this lawsuit. So any monetary damages, any compensatory damages that she claims to have suffered as a result of those notices have not been brought as part of this lawsuit. Also, for the first time in the reply brief, appellant raises a new argument, an argument regarding the proper interpretation of the Rucker decision and whether or not a housing authority is obligated to consider mitigating circumstances when evicting somebody who is being evicted under the one-strike provision in his or her lease. First of all, because that argument was just raised for the first time in the reply brief, it's not properly before this court. But even if it was, the appellant misinterprets HUD guidance on this issue. HUD regulations, the Rucker decision, and HUD guidance make perfectly clear that housing authorities have discretion to consider mitigating circumstances when evicting tenants under the one-strike provision of their leases. They are not obligated to consider mitigating circumstances. And the appellant has cited a letter prepared by a HUD assistant secretary back in 2002, but fails to cite a subsequent letter prepared by HUD that basically explains that the first letter, which was written by a Michael Liu and cited to by the appellants, misinterprets essentially or doesn't intend to say to public housing authorities that you must consider mitigating circumstances. So the point is everything out there, the U.S. Housing Act, Rucker, HUD's guidance, and HUD regulations make perfectly clear that housing authorities do not have to consider mitigating circumstances. And at this point, the appellant has not contested that the shooters who were involved in the December shooting in 2007 were under her control, that with regard to Mr. Henderson, he was invited to the premises by a household member, that is Ms. Stevens' son. Unless the court has any questions, we respectfully request that you affirm the summary judgment decision rendered by the district court.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Mr. Hull, do you have anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. In his argument, Mr. Palmer said that I had misstated essentially what the HUD policy was. I believe that the law review article, which contains the letter I cited, has both of the letters he talked about. The Vermont Supreme Court in the Bennington housing case has specifically talked about discretion. There's no question that housing authorities have discretion, and in that case, the discretion the court ordered should be exercised in favor of the tenant rather than to evict an entire family for something for which none of them was individually responsible. Secondly, with respect to the question of whether or not the case is moot, the district judge said in footnote 4 of the opinion that Ms. Stevens denied that she moved out voluntarily. So under the premise of Solitex and Anderson and that trilogy of summary judgment cases, it would seem that we have the district court making a credibility determination on the issue of mootness. I thank the court for its
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel.